We're on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, and we got up to Badik Lahu. Let's see if we can count down from the top of the Amud, about two, let's see how many lines, three lines down from the top, and we're up to Badik Lahu Rachava Lirabana. So let's just summarize the last thing that we learned yesterday. Rav taught us that if you want to have a ptur, so to speak, of an Erev, meaning if you want to sideswipe, circumvent the need for an Erev of three batim that are contiguous one to the other, and the Bnei Chatzar Achas are going to be molech their Eruv through the bias which is open to their chatzer, and they can put the Eruv in the middle of these three houses. And if the Bnei Chatzar Acheres on the other extreme, on the other side, would do the same thing, so the two batim now become what we call batei shar for this chatzer. And batei shar, as we said, do not need an Eruv. So therefore, even the Bayis HaMtzoi, even the middle house, doesn't need an Eruv. Why? Because when you place an Eruv in a certain house, and that house is hosting the Eruv, as we said before, then that house does not have to participate in the Eruv. So it comes out here, says Rav, that all three Batim are Pturim, they're exempt from an Eruv. Badik Lahu Rachva L'Rabbanan. Rachva is testing the Rabbanan. I guess it was very common in those cases, in those times, that you would come up with a question and you would see if the various colleagues and chachamim were sharp enough to give you an answer to the question. Shtei chatzeros u'shnei batim beinehem. Okay then, so we have the following. Again, you need a little bit of a diagram here. I have in the Masifta a diagram in which what you see is that there are two chatzeros. Each of those chatzeros service two batim. So you have two batim going into one chatzer on the, call it the left side. You have two batim that pour into a chatzer on the right side. And then, in addition to these two chatzeros, there are two batim that separate between these two chatzeros, such that each one of these two batim opens into one chatzer. So you have a bias that opens to the chatzer on the right, you have a bias that's contiguous to it and opens into a chotzer on the left. Ze babederech ze, v'nasad eruvo baze, v'ze babederech ze, v'nasad eruvo baze. Kanu eruvo, o lok, kanu eruv, o lokan. Now, what happens is ze, we start with the word ze, the first ze. And that ze refers to the person who lives in this chatzer in a different house than the other one, right? So you have this bias on the left that goes into that chatzer on the left, and the bias on the right that spills into the chatzer on the right side. So zeba b'derech ze, one can go from his bias into his chatzer, which is contiguous to his bias, and nasan eruvo bazeh, and oddly enough, he places the eruv in the other bias, which is contiguous to the other chatzer. That's pretty strange. And the same thing happened on the other side. Zeh ba b'derech zeh, v'nasan es eruv bazeh. There's like a kind of a swapping situation. In other words, the Eruv that was meant to be placed in the right house, the right side house, was placed in the left side house. And the one that was meant to be placed on the right side was on the immediate right side, which would be the left to the one where he put it on the extreme right. Would such an Eruv be valid or not? Now, honestly, if you ask me for my intuitive, again, the Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth on this, but I think intuitively you would say that this is not an Eruv. Why? Because an Eruv has to be placed in one of the houses that shares that chatzah. So you have two houses on the top that share that chatzah on the right, plus the one house or the two houses that are contiguous. Where is the Eruv? The Eruv is neither in those two houses nor in this house. None of the batim that share that chatzer are holding on to the Eruv. So they happen to deposit the Eruv in someone else's house. That's not a valid Eruv. Unless we apply, that's what the sugya is going to be about, the principle called Beishar. And what we said before about Beishar is that if you have two houses, and the case that we had of Rav with three houses contiguous to each other, one becomes a base shar that leads into the other one. And that connects all the batim to one, such that we didn't even need an error from one bias to the other. So the questioner, meaning Rachva, analyzes the question in the following way. Mima shvinen lehu legabi hai kebeis shar. Shall we classify or identify the house vis-a-vis the other house as a beis shar? Again, the language is difficult. Mi mashvinen lehu. Can mashvin is really lahachshiv in Hebrew? Can we be machshiv one house vis-a-vis the other house, which shares a different chatzer, kibayis, as if it's part of that same bayis, and we'll see why in a second, ulegabi dahai, and then with regard to the other chatzer, again the same principle, beis shar. So it means the second house is considered vis-a-vis the other house, as far as the chatzah is concerned, as a beis shar, ulegabi hai. And again, vis-a-vis the other chatzah, it becomes like a bias. Once you set up the second bias as a beis shar to the first bias, then it becomes like a bias of that chatzah. And now you can have an Eruv of two chatzeros in which the bias opens up to each chatzer, right? And they don't have to have any sort of an Eruv between them, because again, each one is a beis shar for the other one. And now all they need is an Eruv chatzeros with other dayorim that share that same chatzer. And everything is okay, and it's irrelevant where they put the Eruv. The Eruv can be placed in either one of these two batim. Oh, now here we're going to rely on Rashi and try to spell out the other tzad to say that this is not a valid Eruv. And that is, she'im hu bayis klape shteim kibayis oso chotzer shaloi nichabas ha'eruv ein eruv or eruv sharei bayis zeh lo irav ima. In other words, if we're going to view the second bayis where the eruv was placed as outside of the chotzer, it's not connected to the chotzer, then obviously this eruv could not be valid. Ve'imu beishar, and if you want to view that second bayis as a beishar, then klapeshtein hu beishar. Then both houses now become a beishar vis-a-vis both chatzeros. V'ein laniach bo eruv. the osa chater shenicha bosa es eruva eno eruv she nosis eruv beishar umemelo lochal eruv shtehen. So there's another principle here that underlies the logic of Rachma, which was not spelled out, at least I don't remember that we ever addressed this, and that is that you never place an Eruv in a Beishar. Amrulei, so the Chacham say, Shneim lo kanu Eruv. The Eruv, neither of the two Eruvin are valid, not to be matir this Chatzar nor that Chatzar. We cannot consider it as one bias based on the principle of Beishar, and say it's a Beis Shah Lagabi this, and it's Beis Shah Lagabi that. Both of them have Beis Shah, because Mimonafshah. E Beis Shah Mashvisle, if you're relying on the principle of Beis Shah, is we have another halacha, there's a Mishnah later on in Masechta Erevin, Anosei Nasei Ruve Be Beis Shah, etc., etc., Eino Eruv. And Eruv cannot be placed in a Beis Shah. You know, you have a small, let's say you have a small room in front of a chatzer. And that's where, you know, you want to put the Eruv. Or, for example, he gives the case of an Achsadra, which is, he calls it Mavol Lifnei HaKnisa Labayis. You know, you have a little bit of a foyer, so to speak, before you go into the house, but it's not roofed, so it's not really part of the house, or a Mirpeset, that, you know, you climb up to a porch with a ladder, and you can go in and out, but it's not really part of the bias. In all these cases, eino eruv. So therefore, e beishar mashvile kometalta lebayis de lo ma'arivle. So if you're going to consider the bias where he put the eruv as a bias and not as a beishar, then you're in trouble, because you want to be metaltel into a bias from a chatzer without an eruv, because the eruv is in another bias. Basically, what the Rabbanan are responding to Rachva is that, as we say in English, no matter how you slice the cake, or as we say in Gemara language, mimonafshach, you're in trouble. Because if you're going to say that the reason why the Erev could be in the other house is because of a Beishar, well, there's no Erev in a Beishar. And if you're going to tell me it's viewed as a bias, then the Erev of this Chatzar is not being placed in any other batim that share the Chatzar. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute. We have another statement of Rava. And again, we're going to try to understand the statement of Rava. And the Gemara wants to equate our case with Rava. Now, Rava's principle has to do with what we call Suffolk in a Durabanan, in an Erevin Durabanan. And the question is, a suffek of a tarti disaster, meaning, would I be able to take, or let's say, I'll say metaphorically, you know, we'll grab the rope from either end, and grab it from both ends, actually. Amru lo shnayim, seva arev olena. So two people appoint Levi as their shliach to set up an Erev on their behalf. Li Echad, so when Levi set up the first Erev on behalf of Reuven, Erev Olav Mibodjo, he set up the Erev in its proper time. Uli Echad, and for Shimon, Levi Erev Olav Ben Ashmashos. So that's the period of time between sunset and what we call Seis HaKochav, and that's a Suffolk Yom, Suffolk Lila. So that's number one. The story, the plot grows thicker. Then, Zesha Erev Olav Mibod Yom, that Erev that was set up early in the day on behalf of Reuven, Nechal Eruvo Ben Ashmashos. During the Bein HaShemoshes period between Shkia and Seis HaKochavim, the Erev was consumed. So we don't know whether that Erev on behalf of Reuven is valid or not valid. If we view Bein HaShemoshes as Lila, then the Erev was in existence during Bein HaShemeshos, and it was valid. If, on the other hand, we view Bein HaShemeshos as Yom, then already before he got to Shabbos, the Erev was already consumed. Now we're up to the Erev on behalf of Shimon. V'zesha Erev Olav Bein HaShemeshos Nechal Eruva Mishetechshach, which means that the Erev was consumed after nightfall, which in and of itself would be fine. That would in no way undermine the Erev, but the problem is the Erev was set up Bein HaShemeshos, and we're not sure what the status of Bein HaShemeshos is. And Rava says in this case, Shneim Kanu Erev, both Eruvim are valid, both on behalf of Reuven and on behalf of Shimon. And now we're really grabbing the rope from two opposite ends. Why? Because if we're going to validate the Erev of Reuven, the first Erev, and keep in mind that that Erev was eaten during Bein HaShemeshos, then you must be assuming that Bein HaShemeshos is Yom. It still belongs... If you're going to validate the Erev to Reuven, which was consumed during Bein HaShemeshos, then you must be considering Bein HaShemeshos as Lila. No, if you're going to consider Bein HaShemeshos as Lila, then, as far as Shimon is concerned, correct, as far as Shimon is concerned, his Erev would have to be invalid because it's too late to set up an Erev on Shabbos. And Rava is basically, I'll go over the logic one more time for myself, maybe you'll gain by that too, but the point is that Rava is willing to implement the halacha of Safek Erev Lahakel, in the case of the status of Bein HaShemeshos, in both directions. So in one ruling, he's going to say A and not A at the same time. And it doesn't matter, because he's going to paskin one way, defining Bein HaShemeshos as Lila on behalf of Reuven. Let me just get that straight. Reuven is... when was the Erev eaten? The Erev was eaten during Bein HaShemeshos, right? So he's going to define Bein HaShemeshos as Lila as far as Reuven is concerned. So when it was eaten and consumed in Bein HaShemeshos, it was already after the Erev was Chal. On the other hand, he's going to be Machshir, the Erev of Shimon, which was set up as Bein HaShemeshos, and he's going to assume that Bein HaShemeshos is Yom, and therefore it's not yet Shabbos. And that is a fascinating rule of Psak with regard to a Derabbanan, meaning that since Tchumen is only Derabbanan, therefore we can apply the principle of Safik Derabbanan Lahakel and consider Legabe Rishon, meaning Legabe Reuven, we're going to define Bein HaShemeshos as Lila, and therefore his Erev was consumed already into Shabbos, and therefore it's valid. And Legabe Shimon, we're going to say that Bein HaShemeshos is like Yom, and therefore the Erev was valid when it was set up during Bein HaShemeshos. So if you could be Mekil and Erev, even in a case where there's an inner contradiction, as we said, you're grabbing the rope from both ends and accepting both kulos, even though they are mutually exclusive, is then... the Gemara thinks, why shouldn't we say the same thing with regard to two chatzeros? And he set up an Erev in the batim between the two chatzeros. And we're going to be machshiv each bias as either a beis shar or as a bias. And we're going to accept both. So we're going to say that the Erev is going to be valid for this chatzer, because this bias is joining the Erev, he contributed to the Erev together with the other two people who own rights in the chatzer, and that defines the bias as a bias. On the other hand, we're going to consider it as a Beis Shaar, such that it can now house or host the Eruv on behalf of the other house, which is now viewed as an extension of the Beis Shaar. And even though, in a sense, we're involved in a logical contradiction, but Rava has already set the precedent that we're allowed to do so. Gemara says, nein, there's no comparison here. Hachi hashta hasam over there, in the case of two Erevin of Bein HaShemoshes, one which was set up in Bein HaShemoshes, and the other was eaten during Bein HaShemoshes, is we could be mekil there because Suffolk Yamama Suffolk Leila Lo Minkar Milsa. We really don't know, and no one could tell us whether this period of time between sunset and Tzeis is Lila or it's Yom. And therefore, there's no ridiculous, laughable rulings here. Why? Because I can rule for Reuven based on the fact that, well, Bein HaShemoshes looks like Lila. I can rule on behalf of Shimon because Bein HaShemoshes looks like it's still Yom. Aval Hocha, but here, that they set up an Eruv for two Chatzeros with two Batim, and we want to consider each bias as a bias lezu and a Beis Shaar lezu. Well, ilagabi the high bias is lagabi the high bias. For ilagabi the high Beis Shaar is lagabi the high Beis Shaar. In other words, you can't consider a bias as considered both as one bias vis-a-vis the other bias, and then turn around and say, well, no, it's not a bias vis-a-vis the other bias, it's a Beis Shaar. You're involved in a logical conclusion. These are two kulos hasosros, and they are laughable. People will not be able to digest how this is possible. So before we begin, Be'ezer Hashem, the new Mishnah here at the beginning of the seventh parak, I just want to go over one more time the Shakavitarya here about Rachava's question. And I'm going to just summarize it in English. Just give me a minute to get the page. Rachava tested the rabbis by asking the following question. There are two chatzeros with two houses between them. This chatzer came through this house, which adjoined it, and placed its eruv in the other house, which adjoined the other chatzer. And this chatzer came through this house, which adjoined it, and placed its eruv in the other house that adjoined the other chatzer. Do they each acquire an eruv or not? Do we reckon each of the houses as a house in relation to the chatzer on the far side? Ulagabe dahai Beis Shaar, and a gatehouse, he calls it, a Beis Shaar, in relation to this chatzer which adjoins. And similarly with the other house, as a Beis Shaar relation to the chatzer, and as a house in relationship to this chatzer on the far side. So he has here a diagram. He says he's got two chatzeros. So they're not the two chatzeros are not joining into one common eruv. Okay, fine. They wanted to join an eruv that would permit carrying from their houses into their own chutz. But neither eruv was placed in the house that adjoined its chatzer. So someone living in a house in the first chatzer, he calls it number one, walked through the house, using it as a Beis Shaar, and placed his chatzer's eruv in the second house, in house B, as he calls it. So someone living in a house in chatzer number two walked through house B, using it as a gatehouse, and placed his chatzer eruv in house A. Okay, that's a repetition of what we saw before. Now, he says here, it is obvious that if both houses are viewed as a Beishar, then he says, neither Eruv is effective, since an Eruv may not be placed in a Beishar, and that's a Mishnah later on. If, on the other hand, we view both as houses, neither Eruv is effective, since neither house joined the Eruv of its Chatzer. One second, I just want to read that again. Neither house joined the Eruv of its Chatzer. I think, again, he's saying it a little bit different in terms of his language, but I think it's the same thing that we said, that the Eruv is not being placed in that house which is part of the chatzer. You know, you have three houses, the two and this, and the Eruv was placed in a different bias. So neither chatzer's Eruv bread, neither chatzer's Eruv bread, that's one phrase, could be brought to it, since it would have to pass through a house from which it cannot be carried into the chatzer. So again, I guess if he's going through the chatzer into the bias, and there's no Eruv in that bias, he's going to have to pass through that bias that doesn't have an Eruv and allow himself to carry in that chatzer when there's no Eruv in that bias. May house A be viewed as chatzer number two's house, which I thought was based on Beis Shar. Let's see if he says the same thing. To validate its Eruv, and be viewed as Chatzer number one's gatehouse. I think he's saying what we said. Okay then. Let's see if we can make our Schola here, after saying Hadron Alecha Perek HaDohar, and now we're learning a pair called Chalon. Okay, I have a little bit of an introduction here into this perek.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Can I ask a question first?
Go ahead.
So in the diagram in Art Scroll, there's another house in each of the two chatzirot. Are we just ignoring the idea that they have to share, that house A has to share with the other house in chatzir number one? In other words, it's not part of this sugya? In other words, there's actually two houses. There's house A, and then there's the house adjacent to it.
Right.
And that's number one. So we're ignoring the idea that two houses have to join in a chatzir, in an eruv, rather.
Right. Since these two houses are adjoined to each other, therefore he can place the eruv for the chatzir, we'll call it number one, in house B, and we're going to view them all as one bias, because house A becomes a Beis Shar to house B, although that's a little bit problematic, because if that be the case, then how could it be that the Eruv is being made between the other Dayorim who share this Chatzar and house A, when you're saying that house A is really, at the end of the day, just a Beis Shar to house B? So you only allowed the Eruv to be valid because you viewed house A as a Beis Shar for house B. But once you do that, then you've undermined the whole premise upon which the Eruv is built, because the Eruv is built on the premise that the participants in this Eruv, those who are giving the pass, are Dayorim that live and use and serve and are serviced by that Chatzar. Well, that's not true, because you, at the end of the day, you left your Eruv, you placed your Eruv in house B, well, that house is not sharing that chatzah. So how can you be mocked to the chatzah with an Eruv that's being placed in a bias that's outside of this chatzah? And the answer is that we're not going to view that bias as a bias, but rather as a Beis Shar to this bias. But then, if you're going to call it a Beis Shar, then the Eruv is invalid, because there's no such thing as leaving an Eruv in a Beis Shar. So you're really involved in a logical contradiction, and the Gemara thinks that it's kichucha vitlula, which is a phrase that means that the spectator laughs at you, and he says you just don't make any sense. So that's not like the case of Ben Hashmashos, as we said before, because Ben Hashmashos could be viewed as part of the day, as part of the night, and there's no chucha vitlula here. No, there's nobody's joking and making fun of your psak. All right, let's see what we can get here. You have an introduction in your volume of the Art Scroll, which you'll see here, called Chapter 7. I just realized there are no page numbers here. Okay. But I'm going to give you, just to be, you know, to get a broader picture, the Masifta has the following very short introduction. He says that until this chapter, Chapter 7, we've been dealing with Eruve Chatzeros, in the case of different batim that pour into and are serviced by one common chutz. How do we set up the eruv? Now, the beginning of this perek, which is Ayin Vav, Ayin Zayin, Ayin Ches, Ayin Tes, all those blot, the first four pages of this perek, the Tana in the Mishnah is going to enumerate different possibilities where you can get what's called a chibur, a connection between two chatzeros. And therefore, can these different areas join together in one common eruv because of the chibur? Later on, the second half of this perek is going to address dinim, like, for example, if they want to set up a joint eruv and at the same time each one wants to break down into a smaller eruv, there are going to be cases where they cannot set up the eruv together, and then can each chatzah set up its own eruv. We're going to have a discussion about a case where they cannot set up an Erev in each Chatzar unto itself, but only if they join together and form one Chatzar. The bottom line is, this Perek is the Perek of Erev Chatzeros. So we call it Chalon, but you could also call it Perek Erev Chatzeros. So again, we're looking to find a Chibur, a connection between two chatzeros, to allow the two chatzeros to join together in one single eruv. Chalon shebein shtei chatzeros. So you have a chatzer on the north or on the right, and you have another chatzer on the south, on the left, and there's a window between these two chatzeros. So there's no official opening or door, doorway, entranceway, but you have a window. Is that window enough of a chibur to connect the two chatzeros such that they could join together in one single eruv? So the Mishnah says it depends. What exactly is the size, the dimensions of this chalon? If it's arba al arba, if it's got a very serious width of four tefachim, so it means that four tefachim is the minimum. So you've got four tefachim of the width of the window and four tefachim minimum in the height of the window. And again, it's only a minimum of four. So we're setting up it as a square. You could have a rectangular window as well, but at least you have to guarantee that it has the dimensions of four tefachim in width and four tefachim in height. And that's called a chalon. Now, besoch asara, the window is a low window, and it means that the bottom part of the window dips below Asar Tfachim. So from the karka, if you measure the height up to the bottom part of the window, the bottom lip of the window, you'll end up with less than 10 tefachim. Is then ma'arvim shnayim. Two of these chatzeros, right? Yecholim b'nei shtei chatzeros la'arvim shnei eruvin kol chatzim b'nei atzim. Oh, so this is interesting. Because I mistakenly thought that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to join the two chatzeros into one eruv. But it's just the opposite. Our goal is to allow each chatzah to set up its own eruv. And I'm just guessing that I could give two and maybe more than two explanations as to why. Explanation number one is because since I have no intention of climbing through the window, why do I need an eruv to get into the other chatzah? And secondly, the more you expand the two chatzeros, then the more people have to join the chatzah. And if one person drops out, it's going to invalidate the eruv. So the less people, the better. And secondly, moreover, the more people that are involved in the chatzah, in the eruv, and the more people that you require to join, because if we're going to view through this window as if these two chatzeros are together, then each chatzah is dependent upon the other chatzah for the eruv. And what we're saying now is that they we're going to give them the option of ma'arvim shtayim, that they can set up an independent eruv, such that all the people sharing one chatzah will join in an eruv and allow them to carry in and out of their house with the chatzah without paying any attention to the other chatzah. The other chatzah can make its own eruv if they so choose. But im ratzu ma'arvim echad. If on the other hand they want to take advantage of another alternative, we're going to give them the option of combining together as if they were one chatzah, because since we have the dimensions of a window of arba al arba tefachim, and it's below 10 tefachim, again, we're going to have to see why that's so critical, then this chalon gains the status of a Pesach. So it's a funny kind of thing, because on the one hand, if it's a Pesach, then that connects the two chatzeros. And therefore, you can carry from one chatzah to the other, and you can mitzarif the two chatzeros to make it into one eruv. But on the other hand, you have the option of ma'arvim shnayim, because it's not a full-fledged Pesach, and therefore ma'arvim shnehem. Here he adds a footnote here. He says, v'oz yu asurim l'talto michotzer achas l'shniyah, that if they decide to split, and there'll be an eruv only on this chatzah and not on that chatzah, which is one of the two alternatives, then they kind of carry from one chatzah to the other. That's pretty clear. Now, if on the other hand, ratzu ma'arvim echad, then it means yitnu bnei chatzar achas es a ruvan b'chatzah cheres yarvu imohem v'yu ki bnei chatzar achas. So they'll place, let's say you have chatz on the right side, they'll contribute and deposit their eruv in the chatz on the left side, and then it's like one chatz. V'hainu she'enichu bi'echad mishnei achatzeros. Once again, it doesn't matter which one they choose. And now they can be matir. It's mutter for them to take utensils that started Shabbos in one chatzah and bring it into the other chatzah. Then he writes, Aval kelim sheshavsu b'chatzah mutarim b'tiltul mi'chatzah l'chatzah. Ah, so if the kelim with the onset of Shabbos were in the house, were in one of the respective houses, then in order to carry it out into the chatzah, from chatzah to chatzah, you need an eruv. But if there are kelim that found themselves on Shabbos in the chatzer, then here's a chiddush. Again, this is a sugya later on, but we'll just get a little bit of a view of it. Then they're allowed to take the the kelim from one chutz to the other without an eruv. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this has to do with the shita of Reb Shimon. I don't know. I'm not yet ready to sign on the dotted line, but that, you know, you can take from chutzir to chutzir, karpaf to chutzir. Okay, now we get to the next case in the Mishnah. Pachos me arba al arba. So we're talking about a very small window, and it doesn't have the dimensions, the minimum dimensions of 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. And even though it's below asar tefachim, which, as we said before, is more of a reason to consider it as a Pesach, but nevertheless, it's less than arba al arba. Oh, lamala me asara, or no matter how large of a window it is, but it's above asar tefachim, is then ma'arvim shnayim v'yein ma'arvim ech. Then they don't have the option of considering a chibur and connecting the two chatzeres into one chatzer. And therefore, each chatzer has to make its own eruv, independent of the other chatzer, without any possibility, halachically, of setting up an eruv, one single eruv, for both chatzeros. Why? Because since the chalon is smaller than 4 by 4 tefachim, it's not called a Pesach. So you have two chatzeros, they might border on each other, but there's no Pesach between them. Or if it's l'mala me'asorah. Oh, now we get to grips. Well, what's the problem with l'mala me'asorah? So here, he quotes Rashi and he says the following. Imu l'mala me'asorah, hoil v'yesh tachtov mechitza gemura, Hamavdil ben achatzeres harei monas bi'ad his arvusam yachad li'eruv echad. Again, I'm going to assume that we're talking specifically about a case where there is no Pesach between the two chatzeros. And now, this wall, which is partially chiseled out for a window, is now a mechitza, and it separates the two chatzeros. When you have a mechitza that separates the two chatzeros, you cannot mix the two chatzeros together with one eruv. Now, why does this kosel become a mechitza? And the answer is because from zero, ground level, all the way up to 10 tefachim, there's no window. The window is beyond that. It's higher than that. So therefore, you have a bona fide mechitza going from ground level all the way up to 10 tefachim and possibly beyond, and that mechitza separates the two chatzeros in an absolute way. He writes, Hare ilu kol hakosa lo hoya gavoa yosa me'asara hoya nechshav mechitza velo hoya moil eru. וגם עכשיו שאין מחלל החלון כלום בתוך עשור, אין יכול לחושב כפסח, כיוון שיש כאן כבר מחיצה חוצצת בין החצץ. I understood half of this, but I didn't understand the first half. The second half made sense. If there would have been a kosel that only reaches the height of 9 tefachim, let's say it wasn't above 10 tefachim, then for sure, there would be no possibility of an eruv. Why is that so? Let's say the kosel. Oh, I see what he said. I read it wrong. He says, "Ilu kol hakosel lo haya gavoa yoser me'asara." Now, I thought he meant it was less than Asar. No. He's saying that the kosel was 10 tefachim high. So forget about windows this way, windows that way. Once the kosel is 10 tefachim high, it becomes a mechitza. And the only way you can combine the two chatzeres into one is if there's a Pesach. Instead of a Pesach, he has a chalon. but the chalon is above 10 tfachim. If the chalon is above 10 tfachim, he's already got a mechitza. And that mechitza is what we call a mechitza chotzetza, is bein chotzer lechotzer. So the Gemara says, Lema Tnan Stoma Kirab Shim Vengam Liel Di Omar Kolpochos Mearba Kilavu Dami. Shall we say that our Mishnah, that if there's no four, if the window does not have the dimensions of four tfachim by four tfachim, then you cannot set up an Erev between the two chatzeros? Does that mean that we view it as if it's closed up? So let's say you have 3.9 tfachim by 3.9 tfachim. Halachically, that airspace doesn't exist. We're going to apply the principle of Lavud according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, who sets up Lavud as anything below 4 tfachim. So now we're going to say that this window is not a window and it cannot be considered a Pesach because it's completely closed up. It's like boarded up. You know, you put boards on it. Which would mean that if the Gemara's logic is correct, then we paskin, like the Chacham against Rav Shimon Gamliel, that Lavud is three tefachim. So if you had a window that was a window that was less than three tefachim by three tefachim, then it could be, then you could set an Erev between the two. But once you hit three tfachim, by three tfachim, again, we said before that that we're not necessarily talking about a square, but okay, now let's just simplify it by saying we're talking about a square. So if this square is three tfachim by three tfachim, it's already kisosim according to the Chachamim, and therefore cannot be considered as a Pesach. Each chatzah would require its own eruv. So he says, "Avol lechachamim." I'm just reading the interpretation. He says, "Avol lechachamim hasovim shalavu to ad shlosha tefachim." Is therefore afilu imye chalon pachos mi arbal arba, which according to our Mishnah would allow for a joint eruv. And once it has three tefachim by three tefachim, wait just one second. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little confused here. If it's four tefachim by four tefachim, so then we don't say sasu. Oh, I'm sorry. So let me correct what I said. According to the Chachamim Shita, if the dimensions of the window are three tefachim by three tefachim, then you cannot apply lavud, and therefore it's a Pesach. Just the opposite of what I told you before. And so too, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, if the dimensions of the chalon are four tefachim by four tefachim, you cannot apply lavud anymore, and therefore it's not kisosim, it's a Pesach. So Gemara rejects this. Afilu tema kirabbanan. Ad kan lo pligi rabbanan alei de Rav Shimon Gamliel el inyan levudim. Aval inyan pischa afilu rabbanan modu de iika arbal arbach chashiv. Meaning it's considered a Pesach. But the ilo, if it doesn't have arbal arbal lo chashiv, it's not considered a Pesach. So let me try to take a stab at it. I think what the Gemara is saying is that the halacha of lavud is irrelevant. And therefore, the Chacham could also agree that the criterion here is arba al arba. What does that mean? That the determining factor here is whether or not this window could serve as a Pesach. Again, it doesn't have a door, and it doesn't open up completely such that you just walk right in. But on the other hand, if it's a wide window, then it functions in a way that you can, you know, you can pass things back and forth. And at what point do we say we have the minimum great size of the window such that it could function in that way, and you can enjoy the benefits of both chatzeros by using that window? And the answer is 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. So again, in the Havamina, we said that according to the Chachamim, once you have 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim, it's already a Pesach. The Gemara is saying, no, that's not true. 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim, even according to Chachamim, is not going to qualify as a Pesach. You think as long as we go beyond Lavud, it's not Sosum, therefore ipso facto it's a Pesach. No, there are certain objective requirements in order to set up a Pesach that functions as a Pesach. And the barest minimum requirement is going to be 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim, and that's true even according to the Rabbanu. That's the way I think we have to learn this Gemara. Now the Sefer of the Mishnah says, Pachos me'arba, if the window is less than 4 or it's above 10 tefachim, then we need 2 separate Erevim Pshita. Why did the Mishnah have to spell this out? Kevan di Omar, since in the Reish it says, Arba, Arba, Besoch, Asara. The Mishnah has already in the Reisha indicated that we need 2 conditions to be fulfilled. We need our Baal Arba, and it's got to be Toch Asar, so that there's no Mechitza. So Memela, why did the Mishnah feel compelled to spell out that if it's Pochas Me'arba or Lamala Me'asara, then there's no possibility of chibur, and each chatzah needs its own eruv? Came with the Amar Avala Bar Pesach Asara Mimela No Yedana De Pachas Me Asara or Lamala Me Asara Lo. So Gemara answers, Ha Kamashmalon. Why did the Mishnah add this business that Lamala Me Asara is we need 2 eruvs? It wants to teach us the taima, that the reason why you cannot be ma'ariv the 2 chatzeres together is the kulei lemala me'asara, because the entire airspace of this window is above 10 tefachim, and therefore we have a mechitza. Aval, I would have thought miktsaso, this thought crossed my mind, what would be if it's partially below 10 tefachim, partially above 10 tefachim? So if in the case of Miktsaso Besoch Asara, you have a small part of the window that's below Asara, I'm going to take a stab at it, and then we're going to say Ma'arvim Ke'echad. Let's see if I'm right. Is Ma'arvim Shnai V'imratzu Ma'arvim Echad? Oh, beautiful. Imratzu Ma'arvim Echad, they have the option of joining together. Why? Because the lower part of the window dips below Asar Tvachim. And that's enough to undermine the Shem Mechitza, because the Mechitza doesn't reach the height of Asar Tvachim, because part of the window already exposes that airspace before the Mechitza could be created up to Asara. So let's see, which is the Havamina, which is the Maskana? If he would have just had the Reisha, I would have said that if the window, even partially, is above Asara Tefachim, is then Ein Ma'arvim Yachad. Why? Because in order to integrate the 2 chatzeros for 1 Eruv, we need that the window be completely underneath Asara. I'm not sure exactly why I would have said such a thing. But then the Sefer comes to tell me that if the window is l'mala me'asara, then there's no possibility of a joint eruv, in order to teach me that the entire window is l'mala b'asara, but if part of it is below asara, then they could set up one Eruv because you don't have a mechitza, because part of the height of Asar Tvachim is window space, is airspace. But I don't understand the Hamavina. Why do we think in the Hamavina there's no possibility of an Eruv unless the window is completely above 10 Tvachim? Does that make sense? It doesn't seem intuitively understood. If the window is what? Is partially above Asar Tefachim, then that breaks up the air. Why would that be? Since part of the window is above 10 Tefachim. So how does that generate a mechitza? Just because part of the window is above 10 Tefachim. Somehow there's a Havabina here. I don't know why this should. It's not intuitive that the window is viewed as one entity. And if part of the window is above 10 Tefachim, we view it as if the window as a whole was above 10 Tefachim. I mean, what's the logic that would compel us in that direction? That I don't know. Let's just see if by chance he adds anything here. If even the portion of the window, yeah, that's the maskana. But what was the havamina? Since a solid wall of 10 tefachim high divides the two chatzeros, they're considered to however, if even a portion of the window is within 10 tefachim, no, he doesn't give me anything here. All right, so I see we're running out of time. So, b'li neder, I will try to figure out the havamina. And hopefully by tomorrow I'll be a little bit smarter.